Hello and welcome to another episode of our podcast series, Cyprus Beyond the Divide. Today is a joint podcast with the Peace Research Institute Oslo, the Cyprus office of it. My name is Hubert Faustmann. I'm the director of the office of the Friedrich Ebert Foundation here in Cyprus. We record this podcast also in our capacity of being one of the branches of the peace security project in Beirut, but also the energy project that sits in Amman. So there's a lot of FAS involved, but there's one guest involved, and that's Emine Eminel Sülün. She will talk today about the political dynamics of the Eurasia, Euro-Africa, and Türkiye-North Cyprus interconnector projects and the implications for Cyprus. So we talk about our beloved island with a person that lives on that beloved island, and that's, as I said already, Emine Eminel Sülün, who is assistant professor and head of the Department of International Relations at the World Peace University in Nicosia, an expert on energy and geopolitics in the Mediterranean region, and she extensively also works with the Peace Research Institute Oslo office here in Cyprus, in the capacity of which we're producing 5 reports together. And this one is one that is entitled Exploring the Political Dynamics of the Eurasia, Euro-Africa, and Türkiye-North Cyprus Interconnector Projects Implications for Cyprus, as I alluded to. Hello, Emine. Welcome.
Hello, Hubert. Thank you very much. Thanks for the invitation. It's such a pleasure.
Glad to have you here. Let's start with the basics. Not all of our readers do know what an interconnector is. So what the hell is an interconnector? And more specifically, what are these 3 interconnector projects that are in your title? What are they about?
Okay. Yes, it's very important to begin with definitions and explain what interconnectors are in the first place. They're infrastructure projects, basically, that connect electrical grids of different regions or countries, and they basically enable the transfer of electricity across borders. So this is what they simply do. And simply by doing that, actually, these projects or interconnector projects in general, they enhance energy security of actors, of countries. They promote renewable energy usage and they foster regional cooperation. So there are really important advantages, so to say, of being able to get connected together. So the 3 specific interconnector projects that I mentioned in my paper, in the policy brief, are the Eurasia interconnector, Euro-Africa interconnector, and Türkiye-North Cyprus interconnector. With this paper, I really aim to focus on, in specific terms, really specific terms, focus on the political dynamics behind these 3 seemingly quite technical infrastructure projects. So at most of the time, we tend to think that as long as we find financial sources and as long as we find investment for these projects, they will simply, as I described, they will simply be for the good of the people of Cyprus in terms of energy security and renewables and et cetera. Yet there are some very specific dynamics in relation to these interconnector projects, quite peculiar to the de facto nature of, de facto partitioned nature of the island. So the fact that the island is de facto partitioned since 1974, and the fact that it still backs the Cyprus problem, still backs a political settlement, and the fact that there are some blurred, basically gray zones in terms of authorities and how to basically really synchronize and think in island-wide terms, given the existing conflict. I think all these led us to see the necessity of really dwelling on some important political aspects and dimensions of the projects at hand. Eurasia interconnector, it's a subsea high voltage direct current cable. It aims to connect electricity grids of Israel, Cyprus, and Greece. Similar to other interconnector projects in the region, aims to reduce carbon dioxide emissions, increase the renewables capacity, and most importantly, it aims to help Cyprus as an isolated grid to really overcome this energy isolation. EuroAfrica, in a very similar way, aims to link Egypt's electricity grid to Europe, this time again via Cyprus. It provides also alternative energy sources for Europe, and it aims to provide energy trade as well by using renewable and gas sources from Egypt to Cyprus and then to Europe. And Turkey North Cyprus Interconnector, this project is designed to connect mainly Turkey only with Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus to improve energy security. Again, with similar reasons, basically, that I've just listed. So the logic remains the same in all these three projects. Yet, when we dive into details of these projects, we see that there are some basically aspects what tend us to think that they're mutually exclusive. For example, if we have Eurasia and EuroAfrica, we won't be able to, for example, benefit from Turkey and North Cyprus, or as if we see them that they're in a competition, basically. So in this paper, I aim to really highlight that there is no competition among these interconnector projects. With a simple redesign, they can actually be harnessed all together, all at the same time. And they can be viewed, and they should be viewed within the context of even larger Mediterranean, integrated Mediterranean grid.
Thank you so much. What geopolitical problems are attached to this three projects? It's not about Cyprus. I think you already explained to us how this impacts this divided island with the internationally recognized Republic of Cyprus and the non-recognized Turkish separate entity living and cohabitating on the island. What other geopolitical problems are attached to these three projects that can then spill over into the Cyprus problem?
Yes. Well, unfortunately, it's not limited with the tensions between or the problems between Cyprus and Turkey, Republic of Cyprus and Turkey. Geopolitical problems are larger surrounding all these three projects, including territorial disputes in the Eastern Mediterranean border in broader terms. As you also cited, de facto status of northern part of Cyprus, it's such a huge concern in the implementation of these projects, in the way that they could be implemented. So all regional conflicts and competing territorial claims, including maritime disputes, can be considered as geopolitical problems. So I would like to give further details in respect to those geopolitical problems and dive into details a bit, especially about Cyprus, Greece, Turkey aspect. We see there that these countries, Republic of Cyprus, Greece, and Turkey, they hold quite divergent perspectives on maritime zones. So through which the Eurasian, Eurafrica interconnectors are planned to traverse. So maritime disputes, therefore, among Turkey and Republic of Cyprus, Turkey and Greece, can be considered as a factor which would compromise Eurasia and Eurafrica interconnector projects. Republic of Cyprus is not, we know, it's not recognized by Turkey, Ankara, which means Turkey simply doesn't accept Republic of Cyprus as a basically as a signatory to any agreements pertaining also to exclusive economic zone. Also, Turkey doesn't recognize Republic of Cyprus's right to unilaterally create hydrocarbon plants and to basically move forward with any exploration development also activities in the region, but at the same time to have any infrastructure in those overlapping areas, exclusive economic zone areas. So it's like a continuation of the same problem that we basically have been discussing almost for a decade, last decade, in the context of hydrocarbons issue between Turkey and Republic of Cyprus. Well, Ankara definitely supports Turkish Cypriot's assertion of the ownership of the island's natural resources in that context, and of course also their right to be part of those projected electricity infrastructure plans in a very similar fashion, again, as Turkey supports Turkish Cypriot's inclusion into the hydrocarbons development process in general. In the same way, Turkey wants also Turkish Cypriots to be part of the part of those projected electricity infrastructure plans. So all these, if you like, these are new centers of influence, to my understanding, that are emerging in the region based on different topics, new issue areas. I mean, in this context, I think grid infrastructure is such a new emerging issue area, rapidly transforming into competitive domains. And this is the sole reason why I put a lot of effort to really write down why we should we shouldn't frame these three projects in such a competitive way, in such a as if they compete, and try to see how they would benefit from one another. Egypt-Israel tension, I think I should certainly cite this before I move on, because frictions also we see there between Egypt and Israel, especially given the very recent context. So both states, they involve in Eurasia and Euro-Africa interconnector projects. And we know that over the past decade, they have established some peaceful coexistence, yet, and some agreements they negotiated effectively upon gas, natural gas. Yet, we understand that the way that now the conflict is unfolding in Gaza in terms of Israel-Hamas, I think this would be a source of friction for basically in terms of the relations and in terms of these projects as well, since they, as I said, have these actors. And in terms of Greece-Egypt, Gregi cable project, again, I think we should very briefly cite the problems regarding the basically the offshore Libya, the continental shelf regarding there, because we understand that this cable will transfer, will transit from that area, which is also disputed, basically. We should remember at this point, Turkey and Libya continental shelf agreement and how it is contested as well, especially by Athens, in the eyes of the Athens. So all these respective maritime boundary issues, as well as in the Eastern Mediterranean Sea, as well as violent conflicts in the region, could be considered as basically the relevant geopolitical background where these infrastructure projects are trying to find themselves a place.
Let's talk about the local condition in which this infrastructure project is supposed to find a place. Mm-hmm. What's the situation on both sides of the divide as far as electricity, energy security is concerned, and how could these projects help?
Mm-hmm. I actually have a very brief answer for that question, I can say, because it's so simple. Both sides of the divide in Cyprus, they are overwhelmingly depending on fossil fuels, and they urgently need to reduce these fossil fuels. This is unacceptable at this point, at this age, especially in the context of the South, a member of a European Union, a member country of the European Union. It's not acceptable to depend that much on fossil fuels. So that means electricity supply, in terms of electricity generation, they need certainly cleaner sources. North and South, they both therefore face the same challenge of reducing fossil fuels, but also the challenge they share is blackouts, especially this is more valid, I would say, for the northern part of the island. I mean, in the north, there are regular blackouts, I would say, given the inadequate capacity of Teknigik electricity generation plant in the northern part. So inadequate capacity as well as lack of investment. So there are a number of factors compromising, so to say, energy security of the Turkish Cypriot community residing in the north, or any of the individuals residing in the northern part of the island. So blackouts, therefore, dependency on fossil fuels can be considered as main energy challenges. And also lack of capacity of the grid, if you like, because to be able to increase renewables, they certainly need both sides, certainly need to invest more in their grid infrastructure, I mean, in accordance with the latest technologies. And at the same time, they need to increase its capacity. And increasing the capacity of a grid system, idealistic way, is to get connected to another larger grid and to end your isolation. So these would be considered as energy challenges faced on both sides of the divide.
There's actually an example of cooperation between the two sides. There's not too much cooperation given the Cyprus problem between the two sides, but energy is one of these notable exceptions. I do know that there's an interconnector linking the networks of the north with the networks in the south, which probably is helpful with these quite frequent power cuts that the north encounters. What role can this interconnector play in this context, or what role does the interconnector play within these energy challenges on both sides of the divide? Do they both benefit? Is this a one-sided story?
I can say that I totally agree with the emphasis that the existing north-south interconnector can be considered as one of the most significant areas of collaboration. Example, it's a solid example of the possibility of being able to cooperate even under current circumstances when you have no other options available. And it's a very technical matter. It is considered to be as a rather technical matter, but also it's a very, important matter. We can't live without electricity, obviously, and we depend on electricity tremendously. So I think with this understanding, with this sole understanding that electricity is actually a human right, both sides really cooperate on via this existing north-south interconnector synchronized cable between north and the south. It's so vital for managing power system interruptions for both sides. So both sides really benefit from this. And in terms of that, I believe it improves energy security of both north and south. Yet, we should also say that North benefits more from the interconnector because of the reasons I have just explained, the inadequate, insufficient capacity of electricity generation in the North is becoming more and more acute every day. And lack of investment, as I said, and inadequate, basically, infrastructure and the need for more infrastructure also for the national grid. These are just very acute concerning matters in terms of energy security and energy policy in the north. So we understand that when we have a look at, for example, last 4 years, we see that North had more, benefited more from the existing interconnector than the South. But for the South, it is a very good backup.
Yeah. You talk in your report about basically four scenarios for Cyprus and the region. I don't know if you could briefly outline them for our listeners who are nevertheless not excused not to read the report, but to give four appetizers of these scenarios that you developed and the pros and cons in this context.
What I tried to do with this basically paper, as I said earlier, was actually to really shove in a very simple framework, in a very in an understandable, digestible way, how what are the main fault lines? What are the main factors which should be taken into consideration while studying, while exploring the dynamics behind these three interconnector projects? And as I said, to show how they can interdepend, they can be considered more interdependent, they can be redesigned to be more interdependent. So in that context, these four scenarios, they all based on the idea of basically whether they will be designed or they are designed alongside, for example, the Cyprus problem, geopolitical tensions and political problems in the context of Cyprus, whether they are designed with that filter, and whether they include or exclude Turkish Cypriots authority, Turkish Cypriot authorities or Turkish Cypriot communities' right also to enjoy more increased, cleaner sources of energy, let's say, and more secure energy environment. So whether Turkish Cypriots are included or excluded, whether they follow geopolitical fault lines or not. So these are two main factors that I just try to really focus on. And as I said, in order to make it more communicable, in order to make it more digestible for the reader, I ended up with three criteria for all scenarios. economic, environmental, political, geopolitical, because I believe that all these three interconnector projects can be best understood by really looking at their advantages, disadvantages across these three criteria: economic, environment, political, geopolitical. Otherwise, we may not be able to, and we need to understand what we sacrifice in all these three domains so that we can make more sound decisions. So I hope policymakers, relevant bodies would actually therefore understand that for some criteria, there are things that we can't sacrifice, that shouldn't be compromised by interconnector projects as such. So to begin with, in scenario one, I basically moved alongside the way of having system building within EU framework with geopolitical tensions still. In this scenario, let me very briefly go through what it includes. The Eurasia, Euro-Africa projects are actualized as planned, and North Cyprus, Turkey are also connected via a subsea cable. So all three plans are actualized, linking de facto TRNC as well to a larger European grid via Turkey. There is an issue there that we need to really be careful because given the de facto nature of TRNC, it's an issue whether in given context, under current conditions, whether TRNC can actually be part of NTSOE framework. Because NTSOE framework, any de facto state may not find itself a place. And given all those reasons, for example, if you become a part of a synchronized area as such, you need to align with their procedures. You need to basically really amend, and you need to be part of that framework and governance structure. And obviously, the de facto nature of the island would actually compromise that inclusion, that integration. So it's an issue, and it's an issue which would have political implications. For example, for Turkey, if Turkey insists on having Turkey North Cyprus interconnector project connecting TRNC to Turkey's grid, which is already connected to larger European synchronized area, which means to NTSOE. So NTSOE would actually come up with some, as I said, political warnings and issues for Turkey. However, the interconnector that already exists between North and South of Cyprus in the scenario is also abandoned as a political move by one or the other side, which means in this scenario, I argue that if, for example, all three projects are actualized, and especially if Turkey and North Cyprus project is actualized, the existing interconnector between North and the South will be perceived as irrelevant and will be abandoned, and also for political reasons, because this will mean Republic of Cyprus energy grid, electricity grid, will be connected to Turkey. And in given conditions, this is politically not acceptable. I contemplated that this interconnector would be abandoned in this first scenario. So everyone is connected to a larger grid in the scenario, but there are issues for Turkey with NTSOE because of TRNC's inclusion. And obviously, in political terms for the island, this scenario means exclusion of basically. This scenario means two sides, North and South, will be self-reliant. So it's not an island-wide scenario. I hope I explained it in an basically in a digestible fashion, because this means they will basically be separated. They will have separated this since they won't have any interconnector in between, and since they will be connected to Europe but different roads. This won't certainly support more collaborative action, more cooperation, basically, which can be actualized in different scenarios I have here. So this was the first scenario I have. In the second scenario, again, projects connecting Europe and Asia and Europe and Africa are completed. North Cyprus and Turkey are interconnected too, but the TRNC is not connected to a Turkish power grid because this is also another basically option which is mentioned, which is cited. So in order for Turkey to avoid political implications of having TRNC in NTSOE in a de facto manner, Turkey would actually come up with an idea of connecting TRNC to another power grid, Turkish power grid. This would prevent any political issues. Yet in this scenario, obviously, TRNC will not be connected to a larger grid, will be only connected to a very limited mini grid, basically, in Turkey. So in political geopolitical criterion, I believe in this scenario, this is based on the logic of viewing the island as two distinct and isolated grids again. So it sort of promotes division and self-sufficiency, as I mentioned for the first scenario. So the transmission of electricity from Turkey to TRNC will create a political dependency, really huge political dependency between TRNC and Turkey, because the main idea of being able to connect to a larger grid means you will be more flexible and you won't depend one actor only. You will be part of a larger group, larger community, grid community. But here, TRNC won't be a part of larger community, will depend on Turkey quite in a very similar fashion with Turkey North Cyprus water pipeline project. So this project doesn't support regional energy sector cooperation either. And in scenario three, I have an ideal system building alongside regional geopolitical tensions, but not alongside political divide, which means in this scenario, Eurasia, Eurafrica projects are realized as planned, but North Cyprus and Turkey, one, are not connected, couldn't be actualized. For various reasons, especially for financial reasons. So still Turkish Cypriot community is not isolated in terms of energy, as all actors in Cyprus adopt a more inclusive and island-wide policy, and north-south interconnector remains in place. This is the first scenario. I mean, the first and the second one. In the first and the second one, the interconnector was abundant. In this one, it remains in place because Turkey and North Cyprus is not connected. I believe this will be a detrimental factor because the north of Cyprus is also connected, therefore, to a larger grid. This can be done. I mean, this would also have political implications, obviously, similar to Turkey for Republic of Cyprus. Yet, and also not Europe, Asian and African grids also, Cyprus will be connected. But I believe here, NTSOE can be guaranteed by Republic of Cyprus concerning the synchronization and interoperability of the island-wide electricity grid, then it won't be a political issue for NTSOE. So here in this scenario, again, I would like to especially focus on political geopolitical criterion. In this scenario, Turkish Cypriot community is included and there is a trust built between both sides as Republic of Cyprus will step in and give a guarantee to NTSOE for Turkish Cypriot, I mean, for the northern part. The main political risk, though, in this scenario is that Turkish Cypriot authorities may be absent from the decision-making bodies of the NTSOE. So this may not be there for a fully integrated scenario for Turkish Cypriot community. And I hope our listeners will be able to have a look to the report as well, where I elaborate on what I mean with this, basically, if you like, with the discussion on the significance of Turkish Cypriot authorities being included in any type of basically bodies, decision-making bodies relating to energy and electricity interconnectors and NTSOE in this context. So NTSOE is the European Network of Transmission System Operators for Electricity, which is responsible for maintaining the reliable functioning of interconnected power systems throughout Europe. So if you are to get connected to European grid, European electricity grid, that means you will be part of the framework, so to say, of NTSOE in this context, this network of transmission system operators of electricity. And in the last scenario I basically built, it's the fourth scenario. I have the logical system building with regional interdependency dynamics, which takes into account regional interdependency logic. In this fourth scenario, I basically argue that, or I contemplate that the main idea would be to devise a regional strategy whereby an interconnector system can build bridges across political divides and can actually increase mutual trust and understanding. Because in this scenario, I believe all three projects can actually be again redesigned where as different phases, where in the first phase, an initial interconnector, specifically the Turkey-Cyprus one, would be built. But as I said here, I didn't say North Cyprus because I think this interconnector can be viewed as Turkey-Cyprus, where in this approach, this will radically be different than Turkey-North Cyprus interconnector because the interconnector capacity would be increased and would be determined based on the whole island's electricity demand and not North Cyprus only. And the current North-South interconnector will remain in place and will play a crucial role in this scenario, connecting the entire island to Turkey and the rest of Europe. This requires a political sacrifice, obviously, on the behalf of Republic of Cyprus, and it can be an area in which Turkey and Republic of Cyprus can actually forge a ground where they can sit and talk on a very technical matter as TRNC, de facto TRNC, and Republic of Cyprus did in the context of existing interconnector between North and the South. Turkey and Republic of Cyprus find ground there to discuss the significance of such an interconnector, which would actually benefit the entire island. And this is actually the most feasible scenario, economically speaking, in the sense that this subsea high voltage cable will be only constructed of an 80 kilometer between Turkey and Cyprus. And the next phase of the project could involve completing the Cyprus-Israel and Cyprus-Egypt phases of the Eurasia and Euro-Africa, so that Cyprus can also be connected to basically African and Middle Eastern, let's say, Asian grid. And the final stage would be to join the Cyprus-Crete interconnector to both projects. And this is to enhance flexibility and resilience because the island will already be connected via Turkey to Europe, but it would be also from a technical engineering point of view, having still Cyprus-Crete interconnector would actually enhance the flexibility and resilience of the entire system. And construction of any of these phases shouldn't prevent the realization of the other. This is such a huge project in size and breadth. Feasibility studies, they should play the key role here, I believe. But this can ensure that all three interconnector projects are constructed in an integrated and in an interoperable manner, so that not any of these actors, including Turkish Cypriot community, Turkish Cypriot authorities in the north, do not get basically excluded from this entire infrastructure building process in the region. So I will leave the explanation of these elaboration of these scenarios at this point, and if it's necessary, maybe return back and again explain the other aspects of these scenarios. But I think in general, this is how we can summarize the main lines, if you like, with regards to the scenarios I have in my paper.
I have the wild hunch that the last scenario is your favorite one. Am I right, or am I doing injustice to your description of the scenario?
You are completely right, because yes, I think the favorite scenario for me, in the context of on the principle of having larger integrated Mediterranean grid system, In that context, based on that principle, the benchmark that it is actually necessary and it's more favorable for all actors in long run to get connected to a large, to create a larger Mediterranean synchronized area is best for all. It's the most rational choice. I think scenario four would contribute to that, if you like, vision more in compared to others. And it can promote cooperation, it can provide economic benefits and more regional stability in long run.
It's good to have a favorite, but it's also good to check with reality. If you look at the four scenarios, if you look at the politics of the region, where rarely the best solution is the chosen one, what is the most likely scenario to become a reality? Or is any of the four scenarios a likely one?
Yeah, I think if we are to look at the most likely realistic scenario, we should understand that the answer for this depends on where you look at things. So if politics prevail and if politics turn out to be if geopolitical fault lines, as I described also in the scenarios, remain to be the main filter, the main basically reference point for the actors in the region, then the most realistic scenario would be scenario two. System building alongside geopolitical tensions and political divides and outside the EU framework for the de facto TRNC. Because in this scenario, as I explained earlier, the interconnector between North and the South is abundant as a tactical choice. And all sides get connected, but they no longer have this connection, this sort of communication between the two. So in such a tiny island, having two distinct grid systems is nonsense. It's not economic. It's not feasible. It's solely because of the political tensions, and it's solely the embodiment of basically lack of understanding, dialogue and cooperation when you are in a conflict situation, conflict setting. But I think the frozen nature of the conflict at the same time in Cyprus gives us some room for basically some other choices and some other options. And this is where I think economic thinking, rational thinking would prevail at some point. We did that. We managed to have this with the existing interconnector between North and South. We just need to extend it to the region. We just need to basically broaden our understanding a bit more beyond the borders of Cyprus to see where Cyprus is located in the region and how Cyprus as an island would benefit from being a part of a larger regional grid system. So we just need to change our focus basically here. I know this doesn't sound realistic, but if then this sort of rational thinking prevails, why not scenario four would be quite realistic?
What are the main challenges to deepen the connection between the two islands? I think you were in the middle of this already in your previous elaborations. What are the next steps in that direction? If you want your scenario four to become true.
I think lack of cooperation, collective action has been always the main challenge. But when it comes to basically electricity, I think we already manage. As I just said, I think we're not there. It's not similar with any other topics we shall focus on in the context of Cyprus. Particularly in this issue area, we see already a synchronization. The island is one when it comes to when you wear the electricity grid lens and you focus on the grid system, you see that the island is already unified. It's already one system because the north-south interconnector is a synchronized interconnector. So we already see a huge flow of information besides the electricity transmission. This entails the existence of this interconnector. It's so significant as it entails, besides electricity, cooperation information sharing between two communities on daily basis, on basis of minutes, seconds, because otherwise they cannot protect, they cannot preserve the synchronous nature of the line. And they share information, they cooperate. they need to inform each other. They have a netting system, I mean, to authorities, one way or another. This can be a topic of another podcast, I believe. But they found a middle way. They forged a ground where they can actually be more creative and find at least temporary sui generis solutions in the issue areas which they have, as I said earlier, they are left with no other options. We remember in the past when the interconnector between North and South came to, you know, on the table, it was the crisis moment for the South because of the explosion. And for North, it is, as I said, it's such a huge backup and such a huge, basically, remedy for the blackouts. For South, it's very significant for basically increasing also the percentage of renewables. And there are many other basically advantages of the existing North-South interconnector project where our listeners can actually refer and read from the one of the reports, again, I wrote for PRIO Cyprus Center last year, on the last year, 2022, where I try to explain how the existing interconnector has, it's actually so relevant in the context of energy transition in the regional terms. So therefore, although the main challenge is the collective action, lack of cooperation, no, in this field, we already have that cooperation. We just need to admit that. We just need to see that. Yes, we can cooperate. We can basically share information. We can find innovative ways to overcome the border, the existing basically to cross the border, to transcend the conflict in Cyprus in that context. And in this respect, it physically really it's such an indication that this can be achieved. So this logic just needs to be preserved. This is why I think in the scenarios, I have a fear that in any case, this abandonment of the existing North-South interconnector project would be a nightmare scenario, would be the least, preferable scenario, because at the same time, this interconnector is actually an indication of trust building among two communities in this given context. So it should be preserved as a sole example of that. Even only for that reason, any policies which would actually argue the contrary should be abandoned.
Let me just intersect here for the clarity for our readers. When you refer to the explosion, the explosion refers to an event in 2011 when not properly stored ammunition blew up near the main electricity station of the Republic of Cyprus in Mari, leading to massive electricity cuts and electricity shortages. In that context, that interconnector was introduced, just to clarify for our reader where this came from. Given that we both unfortunately implicitly discussed this interconnector project in the context of an unresolved Cyprus problem. Given that it's unresolved and the problem continues, is there a danger by increasing the interconnectivity? I mean, can this interdependence be abused by one or other sides in the conflict? Can you switch off electricity to the other side on a mean day because the conflict escalates? So what are the risks in such projects?
There is always a risk of one side trying to weaponize using control of electricity as a leverage, basically, factor during a conflict. And this is what we mean with potentially weaponizing it to gain a strategic advantage. This is more likely if scenario 4 doesn't prevail, because this is the one where we see an interdependency logic. So where in economic terms, being connected, being interconnected, and being mutually dependent will make sense for two sides, so that this is a very simple international relations, maybe logic back to basics, but this will make conflicts less likely, we believe. So this is why creating interdependencies in this context means a lot. Also to reduce the risks of war, risks of conflict, and risks of weaponizing to gain other political strategic advantages. So in this context, political decisions taken by one country will have significant effects on economic will have significant economic consequences. So I think this is why in this context, we need to basically do an exercise, think how these interconnector projects can be built to meet this maximum interdependency logic in economic terms, especially in economic terms.
I think we are close to my final question, because I'd like to end on a positive note. So I think You're pretty clear. What's the best scenario, just to drive that home for Cyprus and the region?
Yes, since my main focus also while looking at energy interconnectors and grid infrastructure in the region was in the first place to understand why we lack collective action in the region. I mean, why we can't cooperate, why we can't basically, what are the factors there for really sticking with the idea of, if you like, geopolitical, with the reality of geopolitical tensions and everything. And we can't just go beyond to foster a collective action at the regional level. So since this was my starting point, and I was looking for avenues of cooperation, really, and this is where I find grid infrastructure, electricity, and interconnectors as really valuable, if you like, domains to look at, to focus on. Obviously, my best case scenario is the one which would foster regional interdependence and cooperation. So we want energy security, increased energy security. We want some economic benefits as well in an energy trading. This is the part I explained in the report I referred to, 2022 Energy Transition report, again, as I said, published by PRIO Cyprus Center. There I explained how having basically being able to really come up with those interconnectors with the existing infrastructure in place, we have existing interconnector, would actually help Republic of Cyprus as well to meet its pledges, carbon dioxide emission pledges, because there is already an amount of electricity generated from renewable energy sources in the north. And these are also part of the grid system, obviously. And these actually can be also counted in the overall energy, renewable energy generation, so to say, capacity of the island. But because of a number of reasons, for example, because of de facto situation, unrecognition, we can't certify basically the amounts of renewables, the percentage of renewables we produce and transmit within the line. These are, for example, just very technical issues, actually easy to resolve. Just we need to focus on and understand what issue areas are there, which would help us to really understand how we can collectively act to address some of the challenges we have in today's context. And I think to me, the greatest challenge is certainly climate change for the region. So, in conclusion, I can say that interconnector projects, they offer potential for both cooperation, but at the same time, because of the reasons I've listed, they have the potential for further division. So in my understanding, their success depends on the extent to which they promote inclusivity and interoperability. These are two important concepts here. They need to be inclusive so that they don't create new fault lines. They need to be interoperable so that you can go and have the greatest economic advantage, greatest economic advantage. So this is how we can foster cooperation, and this is how and why energy interdependency is so crucial for the region, especially for our region, which is marked by geopolitical tensions and all territorial disputes. So it is us who needs at most, if you like, a different perspective. And someone insistently stating that a different world is possible, a different regional setting is possible. As I said, politicians are there, policymakers are there to decide, but we as researchers, I think, should guide them in a way for the good of all.
Thank you, Amina. That was a very positive message of hope and cooperation in times when the region is rather in a bleak period, and the situation in Cyprus seems not too great either, with nothing going on really substantially in direction of reunification. So I think this makes your report and the ideas in there even more important, and therefore hope your scenario four sees the light of reality. Yeah,
hopefully out of box for many, and so that's stimulating at the same time for many to think in a different way, to guide them to think in a different direction, to guide them to think that a different setting is possible.
Well, thank you so much. This was a podcast with Eminel Sülün about the Eurasia, Euro-Africa, Turkey and North Cyprus interconnected projects and what that can mean for Cyprus. You can find the reports on the website of PRIO, Cyprus Center, that's cyprus.prio.org, but of course also on our website, and that's cyprus.fes.de. You also find our other podcasts on that website, and I hope you tune in the next time. I thank you for listening. I thank Emine, and I wish you all a wonderful day.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.